Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Folks, I am so honored and so proud today to be interviewing Lynn B. Robinson. I should say Dr. Lynn B. Robinson. And we're going to be talking about her latest book, and that is Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. Folks, sit back, relax. Listen to this show. If you have someone who is in the process of transitioning to the other side, this is a must listen to. If you don't have someone who is in the process of transitioning to the other side actively, this is a must listen to, because you know what? One day you will, and this book is going to help you tremendously. So sit back, relax, listen, and then get out there and get this book. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks of energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But truly, the question is, are you really ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. A bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, visit my website, MoniqueChapman.com. And I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, from my website. And again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. Lynn B. Robinson, Ph.D., is a professor emerita of marketing and a former business consultant, an author and speaker, a hospice and community service organizations volunteer, and facilitator for the local affiliate group of International Association for Near-Death Studies. She's written this wonderful book, Loving to the End and On, A Guide for the Impossibly Possible, and she's also written other books on the occult, the intuitive. So, you know, check her out at her website, and that is lynnbrobinson.com. Again, that's lynnbrobinson.com. Welcome, Lynn.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
I am so glad you're here. Absolutely love the book. Folks, it's a quick read. It's about 120 pages. If you got a couple of hours of quiet time, turn off the TV, get the book, open it, and read it, because it's going to fill your heart with so much joy. So, Lynn, thank you so much for sharing this information with us. But I do have a question for you. The title, Loving to the End and On, I get, okay, but A Guide to the Impossibly Possible, tell us about that.
That's for all the skeptics, like some family members of mine who think that the things that I've done for so many years of my life, like being able to communicate with those no longer in physical bodies, mm-hmm. just are not possible. And so I think they are possible, so I've combined that. It's a guide to the impossibly possible.
Oh, okay. Well, that part I love. Now, you know, there's people who consider what you do the supernatural. I don't, because this is my life every day. It's your life every day. So when real people experience this, because we're all, most of us anyway, real people. I think there's a few aliens among us, but not most of us. So when real people go through this experience, it's definitely unique to each and every one of us. But there are some overarching themes, if you will, among making your transition from a living being to a spirit. I guess the question is, how do we know that we're truly going to be able to keep on going, that the love still exists, that the soul still exists?
I think we have to be in tune with what happens while we're in a physical body and allow ourselves to recognize those things that don't seem physical, and yet we are aware of them. Sometimes we can touch, see, or smell them, or hear them. It's really developing an awareness and allowing oneself to recognize things that are not of the physical world. I like to use the term suspend your disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
So that when something happens, when, I don't know, it may be a whiff of someone's perfume or aftershave. I mean, you're totally missing the person, no longer in a physical body, and you're thinking about them, and you get this whiff of how they smell.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that person arrange that to give you that whiff? I have no idea. I can't tell you that. I can't tell you a lot of how these things work. I can only say tune in to what is happening and allow yourself to go with that moment and that activity, whether it's hearing somebody say something or, as I said, smelling. Or I know of people who've felt as though their spouse was in the bed with them, a spouse that was deceased, and they've looked over and they've seen a sort of a crater in the pillow, as though a head had made an indentation. And yet there's really no one there, and no one else. You know, they have no idea how that indentation came, except to say, well, maybe there was someone lying here and left some evidence for me.
Now, for most people, would that frighten them, or would they find comfort in that, do you think?
I think it's all across the spectrum.
Okay.
I think some people are frightened by it. Some people are thrilled. Well, I also have to say, when they're thrilled, it can also bring a tinge of sadness. I mean, we have to recognize that. I do think the physical really misses the physical. It's just that aspect of physicality that misses the aspect of another. And yet it can bring such deep satisfaction and such strong feelings of love and connectedness, even though the physical person. And I really emphasize that so much, that we're talking about not having the physical person. I had an experience in Sedona one time where I was meditating on the side of a cliff, Sedona, Arizona. If you've never been there, it's so gorgeous.
Yeah,
I was meditating on the side of a cliff and became aware of my mother. And then that the sense that I was, to use no other term, I mean, this is a physical term, I was flying with her. In other words, some aspect of me was moving through time and space with my mother, and it was absolutely exhilarating, filled with love, until I heard a friend who was there on this cliff with me saying, "Lynn, we really need to leave." And it was as though I rubber banded back into my body. And when I adjusted to that, I could feel tears running down my face. I hadn't felt them when I was somehow out there with my mom. And so these kinds of awarenesses can come in so many different ways, and it depends on the person. And I think people who have not had the recurring things that I have had in a lifetime perhaps don't even recognize it. So I would just suggest, allow yourself to recognize when you have some of those feelings or experiences. Go with it, you know, return to it in your memory, and maybe the next time it will feel more familiar for you.
Okay. Well, you know, Lynn, you've had a very stellar, to say it mildly, career in the business world. Okay. I mean, you've done, you know, everything. You've got a master's degree. You have a doctoral degree. You've worked in, you know, marketing and such. How did that prepare you? And this is going to sound a bit strange, but how did that prepare you for the work that you're doing now? How did that prepare you for the latest book that you've written?
Well, it scared me of the business aspects of the book, that's for sure. But in terms of the information, mm-hmm. that on, one of the things that happened while I was doing a lot of consulting work was business people who are very analytical sometimes get mired in the technical information. And one of the things that I was able to do with just so many business executives, from mom and pop shops to Fortune 500 company executives, was to get them to become more aware of their creative process, to get them out of logic and into fantasy, imagination, what if. That's a really important sort of terminology in the business world, what if, to get people away from being tied to statistics and to possibility. So in all of that, I continued to open myself up. And frequently, I did some consulting work with some other guys, friends of mine, who were into that sort of thing. And if we had planned something to move a company forward and our work with them was not happening, uh-huh. we had like a day to do it, they'd say, okay, Lynn, do your thing. And I would close my eyes and go somewhere else and come back with 2, 3, 4 ideas of how to modify what we had structured for this group of people, usually men, uh-huh. and move forward. And one of those things would always work. But it was a matter of releasing yourself from too much structure and allowing opportunity. Openness, divine guidance for those mm-hmm. who can track with that.
Okay, well, I think most people can, and I appreciate the fact that you are very open to divine guidance, because that's why we're talking today. And you know, in your book, you write a very beautiful story about your friend Bev, about your husband. I think it was your dad that had passed on, I believe, and how we're going to get into it a little bit later, a little deeper, but the things that have happened to him and other people. But you had said at one time, and I guess it's when you were beginning to write this book, that you experienced the passing of 5 close friends, 2 family members, and a doggie in a very short
yes,
period of time?
I did.
Wow, what was Spirit trying to tell you, girl?
Well, it certainly has to do with my aging stage of life, you know. God, mm-hmm. More and more of my friends are dying. Okay. And I'm joyously interacting with their children and their grandchildren and some that would be their great-grandchildren. So I don't think that those deaths while I was writing the book were any more important to me than deaths that had preceded it. It was just a way of allowing readers to know I'm just not writing about something that I haven't experienced. This is part of my life, just as it's part of a reader's life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all I was trying to get across with saying that.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Dr. Lynn B. Robinson, her latest book, Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. You can check Lynn out at her website, and that site is lynnbrobinson.com. So please check it out. And folks, you know, get the book. It's very instructional. In a sense, it's written beautifully. It's written with a lot of love, and you feel the love coming through. Now, Lynn, speaking of love, can you share with us the story about Bev? I don't want you to give the whole story away. So can you share aspects about her story? Because it was so compelling. I mean, that's what drew me right in, and I read it cover to cover in a couple of hours.
Well, thank you. We were born 2 days apart. Mm-hmm. And in the nursery back then, women stayed in the hospital for several days, and the babies were in a nursery and brought to their resting mothers. So we were all in the nursery together, not just those that had to be in NICU because they had health problems. All of us were there. Mm-hmm. So that's how we began. We went all through kindergarten school, dancing school, summer camps, marriages, children, all of that. We were friends forever. And her husband was quite ill, and so I went to visit her and had a remarkable experience with him as he was dying. She never had believed that I really could communicate with people no longer in physical bodies, but she loved me, so she accepted that part of me and sort of teased me about it a little bit. And when I was able to present her with specific information that I had no way of knowing, it startled her. And so during his dying process, we went with that, and I was there with her as he died and helped with that transition. Not too long thereafter, she inexplicably developed a unique kind of cancer. And I say inexplicably because both of her parents lived to be in their 90s. I expected that we were going to live together, you know, and, and be the old people. My father died at 98 and a half. My mother was much younger. But I had expected to live a very long life with her. She developed a really nasty kind of cancer. And I was able to, well, one morning just felt like I needed to be there with her and went out there, and her daughter was here from another city. And so I was with them, and I left to go be with someone else, got a call shortly thereafter, and her daughter was saying, and her daughter is a nurse, I think mom's moving into the dying process. Can you come back? So I did, and once again I was there with her and the family and was able to experience her transition. And since then, she has occasionally spoken with me. But what was the amazing thing about all of that was that she was able to know that there was going to be more because she experienced her husband's transition with him. She said it was absolutely the most beautiful thing that ever happened to her, and that it exceeded the pleasure of intimate sex.
Wow. That's saying a lot.
Yeah, I think some people out there may sort of like thinking about that. And
that is saying a whole bunch, if you will. Now, when she was going through her transition, if you will, if I'm remembering correctly, her husband's name was Reggie or something like that. Was that her husband?
I think that's the name in the book. I have to tell you that I was not allowed to use real names.
Okay, and that's fine. Okay. So when when she was in her process, Reggie was kind of like around?
I experienced her parents being around her more than Reggie.
Okay. Interesting.
But he was doing all kinds of things before he actually made his transition to get my attention, to show to her, to tell her about, so that she would become aware.
Mm-hmm.
And she did.
Yeah, that's interesting. Opening people up who are making their transition to I guess, be at peace with what they're going through. Okay. Now, you talk about sometimes people just have to get beyond the weirdness. What do you mean by that?
Well, some people just can't get over the possibility that we do live beyond our mind. And they think, you know, anything that talks about dead people talking is weird, is peculiar. And I think some of that has to come, you know, from the ghost stories that we read and talk about when we're kids, and at Halloween, all the ooh kind of stuff that happens. And so we make fun of that, and we tell stories about it, and people think that if you talk to people no longer in physical bodies, there's got to be something wrong, possibly because they've never experienced. You know, I had somebody, there's a story in the book about a dream I have with the mother of a childhood friend who no longer lived close by, and so I called him and said, your mom said, you know, you need to do what I've always told you to do. And so the person asking me the question said, well, why didn't his mother just say, tell him to go to the doctor? And the answer to that is she did the best she could, and I did the best I could, talking to each other through time and space. You know, there wasn't a telephone, and she was doing her best to give me symbols or words or whatever so that I could grasp it in such a way to call him. And he didn't go immediately. He decided to wait till a weekend was over because he had some business thing that he had to do. And before the weekend was over, he died.
Mm-hmm.
Had a heart attack. But that's the kind of questions that people ask because they, as you said, they think it's weird. And you know what? I can understand that they would say that. I mean, if you've never had the experience, then you say, well, why couldn't she just tell you that? Well, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm a little bit, I used to be able to speak Spanish a little bit. I speak less and less all the time because I'm not with people who are doing that. But
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just don't have the vocabulary.
Yeah.
And so I do the best I can, or I'll make up some strange-sounding phrase to try to get across the word that I don't know in that language. So it may be that it's like speaking different languages. I can't really tell you, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it completely makes sense, though, because, I mean, none of us, you know, have experienced, well, most of us have not experienced going over to the other side and coming back and being able to share the story. And between religious upbringing and other factors that are built into this, you may, you know, poo-poo the whole thing, or you might embrace it depending on where your soul is in its evolution. You did share a story in the book, though, and this might be the one that you were referring to earlier, where there were the two brothers, and one brother, I guess, embraced you and believed in what you do, the other brother not so much, but he wanted to talk to you as he was making his transition. Is that the same one? And he passed away right after you left?
No.
Okay.
That's not the one to which I was just referring. That story is about a friend who had leukemia and had sort of lived with it off and on for a long time, and I didn't know it had reared itself up again. And his brother called me from his hospital room 60 miles away and said he wanted to speak to me, and so we talked, and then the brother got back on the phone and said he... And I said, would you like me to come over there? And the friend said yes. The brother said he's really sick, and so I didn't think I had time, but I figured it out, and I drove the 60 miles to spend 10 or 15 minutes with him. And yes, when I got home, I had a phone message saying that he had died right after I left.
Mm-hmm. And there was something with you getting, I guess, the vision or thinking of 355 when actually he died at 315?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
That
okay.
specific. He did come to me in a dream about 10 years after he died.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 10 years? I'd have to go back and look at that. But
mm-hmm.
quite a few years after he died. And he just never even wanted to talk about metaphysical things with me. But, I mean, he would, but he never got into it, never really believed it. But he's the one who came back in a dream and took me to what in Dreamland, which I called mm-hmm. Metaphysical Night School.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to some kind of class, which was typical of him. He was very smart. And we went to some kind of class, and that's where I awakened the next morning from having gone to that class knowing only that phrase that anger can be so intense that it burns itself up. Love is indestructible.
Well, love is definitely indestructible, and yes, it still does go on. I know that when my mom passed, I was not there. Sometimes I beat myself up about that, but I think I've mostly gotten over that. I wasn't there. I was home, and when they called and said she was passing, I asked a weird question. Well, how long do you think it's going to be? Because I was 45 minutes away from her, and if she was going, so they thought in the next 5 or 10 minutes, you know, I wasn't going to, like, you know, race up the freeway and get there. So I ended up not racing up the freeway and getting there. They called me back, told me that she had passed, and someone was with her, asked the nurses to be with her, and they were. And I asked my son, my oldest son, to come out and just sit next to me on the couch. We were sitting on the couch in the living room. And about 10 minutes after that, all of a sudden, my son started hitting his right ear. He's like, what is this? What is this? Get away, get away, get away. And I said, what's wrong? He goes, this huge spider web just went through my ear. And
wow.
I said, oh. I said, oh, that was Grandma talking to you.
I love it, yes.
You know, and she knew that I wouldn't appreciate with her coming to me that way, but she knew that on some level that he would be okay. I don't know what she said to him because, you know, he was so freaked out about it, but, you know, I knew it was Grandma. Okay, I knew it was my mom, and I knew she had something to say. And my summation is that she's okay, and, you know, she's gone on to do whatever. But somebody
so I want to point out to you that you just said your friend was so freaked out about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the weird thing is all about. He was freaked out. To him, I mean, you understand the relationship that I'm seeing there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, different terminology for the same sort of reaction that people get.
Okay. And also, like what you shared in your book, you shared stories of, you know, loved ones coming and whatever, when the person is in their, in quotes, deathbed. Well, my mom had been in hospice, out of hospice, back in hospice, and I had to place her in a nursing home because she was Alzheimer's and she was a runner and I just couldn't control her. But I would go visit every day and she would say, oh, my daddy was here yesterday and we had lunch. And she would give me full detail of what they had to eat, what they talked about. Same with her mom, and even my dad came a few times and had lunch with her or dinner with her. And then one time she told me he took her out dancing because she loved to dance. You know,
and I believe it. Yeah.
I believed it too because she gave such detail.
Mm-hmm.
Such detail. I mean, you know, she wasn't one to fabricate things. Okay. And if she were upset with you and wanted to use a curse word, it was generally dagnabbit. So she pretty much was a straight and narrow. But when I was reading your book and I remembered back to so many of the things that my mom had talked about and that my grandma had talked about, that there seems to be a universal theme going on if we are willing to pay attention and truly listen to what the person is saying instead of having them committed to an asylum. Now, you talk about, and I don't remember who it was, but you talk about in the book about, you know, a case where someone was committed, right?
Was committed?
That was in a hospital, and I guess they were committed to the mental part of the hospital, and they had to get up and walk to the day room to get a glass of water, and the person was, like, bleeding all over the place and could barely make it.
Yes. Yes, that happened with my father.
Oh, okay.
This was a story about my father, and this is an example not so much of communicating with others, but taking care of people as they approach the end of life and listening to them and knowing what's available to them. He was having some difficulty staying present and staying calm. And he was, you know, at the end of life, as the body starts to shut down, unfortunately, sometimes our medical community can prescribe too many drugs without looking at their interaction. And they do the best they can. I know they're trying hard. And several of his physicians decided that he should go into the hospital. And so he did, but the physician they decided would be the primary one monitoring all of this was a psychiatrist and had him admitted to the psychiatric ward, which was insane to us. I mean, we thought, whatever, we won't go there. Anyway, he ended up having all of that changed, but it made no sense for him to be where he was, and he ended up being very weakened by the experience and died not too many months thereafter. But there was some marvelous learning experiences through all of that about how to listen to the love of those who are leaving us and how to provide love for them and to just go with them, you know, with whatever's going on in their lives. I mentioned one instance of his being confused on one day and thinking, because he took a nap in the morning and another in the afternoon, and every time he woke up, he thought it was supper time. And the caregivers who were there with him just went with that. Instead of saying, oh, no, it's breakfast, they just fixed him his usual supper. And so he was delightfully happy. It was a wonderful day. That never repeated itself. But there are other instances like that. I remember when my grandmother was gradually leaving us, and they had had to put her in a nursing home for similar reasons, as you stated. And one of her caregivers there said to me, one of the nurses said, you know, she doesn't want to eat anything but bananas and chocolate.
Uh-huh.
And I said, sounds good to me. Let her have it.
Yes.
Who cares about dietary restrictions when you're on your way out?
I know, but the medical community is so crazy with it. As I said, my mom was placed, and they, you know, she was diabetic, and she had other things going on. I'm like, she's 91 years old. Let her eat whatever she wants to eat. And when they wouldn't give it to her, I would bring it in for her.
Well,
I mean, just let her. I mean, you're keeping her alive to sit in a place where no one pays attention to her, where she's sitting up in a hard wheelchair all day long to watch something droning on the TV. Is that a quality of life? You know.
Well, did you notice in the book where I mentioned a family who would take, you know, the swab sticks when people are literally in the last throes of life,
uh-huh.
and frequently they're breathing out of their mouths,
uh-huh.
and the mouths are getting drier,
yeah.
and they would take you get those glycerin swab sticks that you can uh-huh. swab their lips and in their mouths and make it feel more comfortable for them, and they would dip it in their loved one's favorite beverage, whatever it was. I think I mentioned that had I known uh-huh. to do that, it would have been bourbon for my
bourbon
dad.
For your dad, yep. Well, you know, I already decided mine's champagne. I decided that right then and there when I was reading the passage in your book. And you know, why not?
Exactly.
You know, why not? Let people enjoy whatever they enjoyed most here while they're still in physical body. And, you know, they might take some of that energy with them as they move on. But, you know, Lynn, talk to me about hospice. I've experienced hospice twice, once with my mom and once with a friend who I was actually acting as a surrogate daughter because her daughter couldn't handle everything. It was just too emotionally raw for her. And, you know, I didn't have a pleasant experience either time. But when you talk about hospice in the book, it seems like it could be a more kinder, gentler process than what I experienced. So what should one expect, do you think?
So many wonderful things, I cannot tell you.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they will take care if you've chosen a good hospice resource, and I would suggest if somebody needs hospice that they talk around to friends, because in most communities there's more than one hospice service available,
mm-hmm.
and so find out, you know, what the experiences have been. They will take care of ordering all the medications. They will take care of coming in and bathing, changing sheets, making the person more comfortable, assessing whether or not it is time to move to a different form of medication or to increase or decrease medication, depending on what's going on with the patient. They will answer questions for you when it's time. When the person actually passes, they usually get in touch with whatever funeral home that you have arrangements with, so that the funeral home will come and take care of the bodily things that have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You and I know that when someone dies, the body releases a lot of fluids, etc. Hospice
mm-hmm.
cleans that up. They'll change the bed. If there's any problem in the room, they take care of that. They are very comforting. As a hospice volunteer, I was what was called, and I haven't done it this year because I've been so involved with the book, but I'll get back to it. But I was involved with what's called the 11th hour service, which means that if someone is dying alone, that for some reason they have no family, or that their family can't get there in time, or whatever the situation might be, a hospice
uh-huh.
worker will be there. There was one instance I had that, you know, I left feeling pretty good about. Sometimes I'm not sure if the person knows I'm there, I'm helpful or I'm not. You can take music, but you're doing a lot of things. But in this one particular instance, the phone rang in the room. And, oh, by the way, this woman's oxygen piece had fallen out of her nose, so I was able to get a nurse and have the nurse put that back in, because that provided some comfort as this woman
uh-huh.
was leaving her body. Uh-huh. But the phone rang. I picked up the phone, and it was her sister, who lived in a neighboring state and thought that she was going to be able to get there, but something had happened and she'd been delayed, car problems or something. And I knew that hearing is often the last of the senses to go. And although I'm not really convinced between you and me that it's physical hearing, as much as some combination. But at any rate, I said, would you like to speak to your sister? She's not going to, I don't think she'll be able to talk to you. Sometimes they do revive and say something. You never know. But I did tell her, I don't think she, but you can talk to her. And she said, oh, yes. So I was able to put the, you know, the phone to the lady's ear. Her sister had the pleasure of knowing that she had at least spoken to her and told her whatever she wanted to say, even though she had physically been delayed from getting to the room. So as a hospice volunteer, that was a connection that I had had the joy of making available to a family member so they could love to the end. So those are some of the things hospice does. The actual hospice professionals do the earlier things, and some of them are so loving.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so loving to the family members during and after the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, look for a good one. With my mom, we had to use the major HMO that she was a member of, and one word, curses. I just, you know, that wasn't a pleasant experience at all.
I would say in that instance, if you're not having a good experience with whatever representatives are being sent to you, call the office.
Did. And it didn't do anything.
And see if they have someone else that might come by that, and, you know, talk about it gently. You know, I'm having a difficult time. I don't know what I'm saying, but I don't seem to be getting clearly through, and so is there somebody else you might send for me to talk to where I might, they might understand me better?
Yeah, we went through that about four times.
Take some of it on yourself.
Yeah, well, I took some, but I wasn't loving about it. I got to tell you, when I see something, I'm a tiger coming out. Folks,
it's really a hard time to be able to do that sort of thing because you're hurting.
And you know, I don't want a whole bunch of practice in it either.
Right. Right.
You know, but we live, we learn, we grow. Folks, we're speaking with Lynn Robinson, author of Living to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. Lynn, in your book, you talk about HBDI profile. What is that?
It's the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument, and it is a wonderful resource for learning to understand how you prefer thinking. It's really a thinking model.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are things that are spelled out in that, and there's actually a test, and that's not an assessment instrument is a better way of expressing that, to find out your preferred thinking style, whether you're logical, rational, analytical, whether you're more social, loving, whether you're more intuitive in your preferred thinking style.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are able to understand those things, then you're able to understand your interactions with other people more effectively. And I think I gave you an example in that chapter of not to expect all kinds of physicians and nurses to think exactly alike. I think, you know, that a pediatrician, someone who is involved with babies, is likely to be more intuitive in their thought process. That doesn't mean they aren't also analytical. It's just their preference might be more to the intuitive, more to the socially loving expression, as versus how do we, what are the steps that we're going to take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it does, and it helps you understand your interactions with those who are caring for your loved ones and those you're asking to care for your loved ones.
Okay. And what can one do themselves as to kind of prepare their loved ones for what they may want? Or you hear stories about, you know, a couple talking and one vows to come back to the other and they pick a sign and, you know, more than likely the sign does show up. So what can one do to prepare themselves and their family members for the time of their transition? Because most of us do transition. Very few of us tend to just take our body with us.
Yeah, I have to laugh that you're asking me that question, because I'll tell you the truth, I've been unsuccessful with some of my family in getting them to even want to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I have some family members who just don't think this is real at all, and I just keep working with them. One of them is reading this book and now asking wonderful questions. And I think the book has opened him up a lot. But just talk about what kind of signs that you think you might be able to get across, or what you think you might be able to see. Or everybody has a different preference for things that matter to them. I know with one friend, the loved one who passed, it said, "I'm just going to leave money on the ground. You're going to find money when
uh-huh.
I'm gone." And bless that, if that person didn't start finding, I've forgotten whether it's dimes or pennies,
uh-huh.
but you know, just she would look down on the ground and there'd be one. You know, get out of the car at the grocery store and there'd be a penny on the ground by the car. Get close to the door to the grocery store, there'd be another penny. And that went on for several weeks. So choose something that you either think is fun, funny, or particularly meaningful. Something that has some emotional energy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And just talk about it and see what you get. I mentioned the story in the book where my cousin who was dying of brain cancer, and I was teasing her. She was very open to this. Her siblings, not so much so. And she said, "Well, just look for the butterflies."
Mm-hmm.
And at her funeral, there were so many yellow butterflies, those little yellow butterflies. I don't know if you have them in California.
Uh-huh.
We
yeah.
have lots of them here. And they just swarmed through the cemetery as she was being buried.
Wow. How beautiful, how beautiful. Well, I love in your book the story about the cat who slept on, I think it was the woman's back,
yes.
and
yes.
put its head on her head, and it would actually stroke her hair like her significant other did?
Yes. And if you, I don't know if you recall, but the couple that about whom that story is written are both PhDs in chemistry.
Hmm.
He's the one who predeceased her. So we're not talking about frou-frou kind of people who've lived with their heads in the clouds. I mean, mm-hmm. these people have created patents for chemical processes that help prolong life, actually.
Yeah. And it's,
so we're talking about the surviving spouse in that couple.
Mm-hmm.
And she has experienced through her cat the love. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because it's really a beautiful story.
Oh, it truly is. And y'all, folks, again, the book is Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. And, you know, yeah, part of, you know, what I do here is interview people and help them get their word out to the world, their work out to the world. But this is truly a book for everyone. I don't care how old you are, what station in life you're at, because at one point in time, you're going to have someone in your life, or you yourself is going to experience this process. And my firm belief is, my BS, if you will, is that the more information you have, the more of an opportunity you have to make up your mind about what's important to you. It doesn't have to be important to someone else or right for someone else, but what's important to you. What are your thoughts on that, Lynn?
I totally agree with you. And I think when you stop and think about what is important to you is when you may do something like you just asked me. You may find a clue or a cue to what you want to share with someone before you leave, or that person leaves, that connects the two of you together.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't put all that, you know, you say it out loud, you might get that thing of grandma coming by in your ear and talking to you.
That's a wonderful story, absolutely.
You might be, you know, a little surprised by that, so let's keep the shock level down and, you know, prepare. Lynn, our time together has been short, but I've absolutely positively loved it. Now, the book is available everywhere. And you can also get it on your website, or?
Well, no, you can't get it on my website. It's available
okay.
through Amazon and Barnes & Noble for sure. It's available from Balboa, the publisher.
Okay.
And I'm not clear as to whether or not it's actually in bookstores yet or not. The bookstores have gotten really funny about what they order and when they order it and how they carry it. But for sure, you can get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. I appreciate you asking that.
Okay. And folks, if you go to lynnbrobinson.com, you can download an excerpt from the book and you can get a flavor from the book. You can feel the love that is coming through, you know. And, you know, Lynn, she said she's, you know, getting up there in age, as if we're all lucky enough to keep breathing, we all do. But you know what, folks? Life is not over for her. Life doesn't have to be over for you unless you choose to give in and give up. So as she keeps going and providing us with wonderful, loving information, okay, you can do the same for yourself and your family. So, Lynn, thank you for being with me today. Audience, thank you. The Divine in Me honors the Divine in You. If you're looking to live a more balanced life, you can give me a call for a consultation. Consultation is 30 minutes or longer, or offered at a 10% discount. If you mention the podcast, love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of loving to the end and on. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.